This episode is brought to you by Challengers Comics and Conversation. Go to challengerscomics.com and start the conversation now. Daniels Law LLC in Georgia. Visit dlawllc.com. Kerberos Productions. The minds behind the games Enter the Pit and Kaiju A Go-Go. Search for Kerberos, K-E-R-B-E-R-O-S, on Steam, or go to Kerberos-Productions.com to check out their growing catalog of titles.
My little ones, I am very proud of you all. You have done well, but the night is young, and we have much to do. Much to do to make sure that Halloween never ends. That from this moment on, the world shall know only eternal night.
Still Playing With Toys.net presents The Ghostbusters Interdimensional Crossroad, the biggest podcast since 1909.
So great!
News, interviews, and commentary on everything Ghostbusters.
Are you the key man?
Here are your hosts, Troy Benjamin and Chris Stewart.
So you're sick. That's what you get for being at a Halloween parade in the rain in Vancouver, you know, Pacific Northwest Halloween parades.
What other kind is there in the Pacific Northwest? Exactly. What a rainy parade.
A rainy parade. I hate to rain on your parade, but
yeah, that saying has expected. No meaning here at all.
Just
hate
happens.
To rain on your parade. What do you mean? Are there dry parades? Are there sunny ones? We don't understand.
Yeah, I mean, this is LA. It's still 100 degrees, and you know, there's a parade every 4 hours down at Disneyland. Come on.
One of my few trips down there. I've been down there a few times. I got to go with friends to Santa Barbara. Joe Medjuk Land, as I like to call it.
Yes.
And
Montecito.
I don't know if it was their joke or if it's actually the motto of the city, but like City of Parades. And they were telling me there's always a parade going on. And I'm like, that's funny. Yeah, parade. No, every day there's a parade. I'm like, yeah, whatever. And in one of those movie moments, we pulled off the freeway pass up into town, and there was a bike. Some sort of hundreds of cyclists go by. Then the other way went a stream of rollerbladers as a parade. Like not a handful, like hundreds of them. We turn around the corner and there was some sort of clown parade going on. like my first 2 minutes in Santa Barbara was three parades went rolling past.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. So.
I'm sorry to hear that. So does that mean that you don't have a drink tonight then?
If you're I do. It's
under
just,
the weather.
I do, but it's. It's tea and honey and a bag of fun-sized misery candies. So,
no hot toddy. You didn't spike that tea with anything, then, I take it, huh?
No. Well, I should have. No.
Yeah. All right.
Can you put tequila in tea? How does that work?
I don't. Maybe. Possibly.
I mean, technically, you can put anything in tea.
Brandy?
Yeah.
I
don't have any brandy.
All right. Well, so officially, no drink for this episode, then. Sorry,
no
everybody.
Drink. Well. Let me think here.
You're really snotty. There's something slimy in there. Gross. But
Egon, your mucus? No, we kind of.
I already did that. Yeah.
Have we used yes, have some?
Yes, have some.
There we go.
Yes,
anything that's non-alcoholic?
Some.
Yes, have some. Would you like some tea and honey? Do I?
Do I?
Yes, have some. Yes, have some.
Well, let's. I think what we're going to do, Chris, we're going to throw the format off of what it usually is, because we've got a lot in this show. We've got Ernie Cline, author of Ready Player One and Armada, and the screenwriter of Fanboys, and one of us as a fan. We've got him on the line coming up here, and we've got a little bit of discussion about Halloween films. We're going to help you program your movie marathons while you're sitting there waiting for trick-or-treaters, or you've got a party. You know, you gotta put something on in the background. You know, we're going to help you program that. So what we're going to do is we're going to do a little news, but we're going to do it headline style, and then we're going to come back because there was something really cool that happened that we do absolutely want to discuss. So here we go, with a little bit of headlines, and then all of the awesome programming that's coming your way.
Egon, Peter, I have some news from the world of Dozer.
Yeah, well, here's your next month's cover of GQ.
So Chris, yeah, so this is This is headline style. We're going to do a little headline news for you. If you were sitting at the airport waiting to get on your flight, this is going to be the headline news.
That's right.
Segment. So first thing we absolutely have to talk about, Ernie Hudson handed out a Lifetime Achievement Award to our good friend Michael C. Gross this past week. And it was for the Geeky Awards. Was that right, Chris?
That's correct.
It was a Stan Lee Lifetime Achievement Award for the Geeky Awards.
That's the one.
And so this is something, you know, we had Michael C. Gross Day that came up about a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago now that you're listening to this. And so getting to see Michael C. Gross get an award, that's super cool. Then we've got Lego. Something slipped. There was Toys R Us accidentally leaked out a description, a product description for the Ghostbusters Firehouse.
Well, blame where blame due. Toys R Us Canada, apparently.
I don't want to point fingers, but I'm pointing north.
Well, I'm pointing down. but they pulled what we colloquially like to call an Amazon, because how many times over the years has stuff leaked out because Amazon has... As the 800-pound gorilla of not giving a crap revealed details about movies, books, cover art, toys. Like, throughout the years, they almost, you know, a couple times a year, they seem to let slip just because somebody gets the upcoming product list, punches it into the database, and for whatever reason, it goes live earlier than the details should have.
So that's what happened with this Firehouse. There were a few details, including the piece count and the amount of minifigs that are going to come with it.
Did you
and
hear a piece count? Because I didn't hear a piece count.
We're not Googling our way through the show, folks. I'm sorry, but no. It's all in my head. The one thing I do vividly remember is that it came with like six minifigs or something ridiculous like
nine
that.
Nine minifigs.
Well, minifigs.
We're supposed to be doing headlines, and we're already failing. So let me run through this quickly. Then
run through it, and then we'll move on to the next thing here.
The background is last year. The Lego Ghostbustery fans, I believe the same gentleman behind the Ecto, went on Lego Ideas with his sub 7,000 piece fire hall, and he got his 10K signees. Then this year, either him or somebody else came back with a retooled model that was about half as many, like we're talking about 3,000 bricks. And they were well on their way to getting their 10K if they don't already have it by now. So it seemed a good bet that everybody's like, with the success of the car, we may see the fire hall coming up, and it'll obviously be a premium kit. All right, nope, you know, 3,000 or, you know, 7,000. It didn't matter how many bricks. That was going to be a hefty kit to get. And then the Toys R Us leak came out, and Brick Fans posted it, and it amounts to 9 minifigs, including the boys again. And they made point of great things like 9 inches tall, top to bottom. A mechanism for sliding them down from floor to floor, and little clear plastic armatures so you can make the ghosts float from, hang them from the ceiling, essentially.
That's great.
And then at the end of the day, here's the kicker. Get ready. $39.99 suggested retail price.
No.
Oh, no, not $39. $399.
Boy, I was going to say, that's absurd. That can't be $39. No.
I haven't had a drink at all, but now it's the head cold. I'm blaming the head cold. $399 and it's $400 set. Holy cow.
Yeah, so that's we have more details on it than we probably should at this point, but stay tuned here to the podcast once things are officially announced, and we'll get back to you with that.
That's
right. We have to talk about Zuby. Zuby announced and actually already released that they've got that Stay Puffed add-on for the Zuby app that we kind of hinted toward last week, and here it is. It's out. So hit us with your best Stay Puffs. And in fact, our good friend CD_Williams, he accepted the challenge already. Good for you, man. That was fast. I mean, it was like the day the podcast went live.
I know.
So
he's already put out his death metal Stay Puff. I have not done mine yet, so once I get this, actually, maybe the cold will help. So
yeah, we'll do some Stay Puffed recording and send them our way, and Chris and I'll take a look at them. Maybe feature a few of them here on the podcast. Also, Bill Murray doing an AMA as we record this as well. So if you're listening to this in the past, if you're a time traveler, hopefully you can participate in it. But if you're listening to this in the present, unfortunately, it happened after we recorded, so we'll talk about that next week. Don't you worry.
He
I'm sure there's funny things in there we'll talk about.
He did one last year for Monument Men, and surprise of surprises, almost a year, exactly a year later, he's back. It's not Ghostbusters specific, but Ghostbusters always comes up, and especially given the year he's had Ghostbuster-wise. Once we find out what, you know, Ghostbusters details came up, we'll talk about it.
Yeah, yeah, he'll predominantly be talking about Rock the Casbah, which looks awesome, but yeah, hopefully there's a little bit in there. So we'll pick out some awesome gems, and we'll give them to you guys next week. Our last headline before we get back to talking about our good friend Michael Gross, I don't know if you guys saw, it was maybe a few months ago at this point, but a novice animator out there was working on a side project and wanted to recreate the real Ghostbusters introduction from the, you know, the animated series. Wanted to do it in 3D, you know, kind of doing it in that style that you see now is there's no Saturday morning cartoons, but on Nickelodeon and on Cartoon Network. And finally, the entire theme song, that entire introduction was released just this past week. And it's pretty fun. I mean, it's interesting to see how that could have been if that cartoon came out in present day as opposed to back in the in 87, 89. God, yeah. When did it air? 80, no. 80,
86 on.
86.
86
right.
to 91.
Yeah.
I want to say.
So if this was the CG version of Real Ghostbusters, it's like a glimpse at how things could have been.
Yeah, it's a double treat. You can watch the opening intro animated, you know, by computer, and they do a shot by shot comparison. Like, because obviously they went scene by scene or shot by shot in the original animated one as comparison, and it's very close.
Yeah, it's pretty close. It's pretty fun to watch, so check that out. Seek it out on YouTube. It's also on the Proton Charging Facebook. We'll post it up to the show Facebook. You know, seek us out at Ghostbusters Interdimensional Crossroop. We'll put it up there. And yeah, that's all the news that's fit to print today. But we need to go back. We need to talk a little bit about Michael Gross and this Lifetime Achievement Award. It was, again, I mean, we tried to rush over it, but it was super cool to see. There were photos that came out. I haven't seen video of it. Have you, Chris? I don't think that exists, does it?
No, lots of photos. I haven't seen any videos, but photos. I actually caught wind of it last week because I was doing one of my scours for... The future will come, and we will have home expert systems that will do things like keep your fridge stocked with milk when you run low, teach your kids how to read, watch the stock market for you. All my expert system has to do is keep an eye on anything with the word Ghostbusters in it, so I don't have to do it, which is what I'm doing now. And that's how I stumbled upon a PR firm on Twitter. Was, I don't know what the Twitter version of vague booking was, but they were like, we just got a Ghostbusters star to give an award to in a VIP next week. And I'm like, what star? What VIP? What award? And I tweeted at them and got nothing back. But and then, yeah, Ernie Hudson posted that he was on his way to... the Geeky Awards with Michael C. Gross. And then afterwards, both he and J. Michael Straczynski, who obviously would have worked with Mr. Gross there on the cartoon, both sent off their congratulations for that Michael C. Gross got the Stan Lee Lifetime Achievement Award.
Stan Lee Lifetime Achievement. And so it sort of also serves to, you know, what... our Ghostbusters Mania friends were trying to do with Michael Gross Day, you know, just to show this guy how much we appreciate his contribution to what was done and the mark that he left on popular culture. And I think, you know, if anything, Chris, this Lifetime Achievement Award, being up there on stage, you know, accepting an award from Ernie Hudson, the fact that it's a Stan Lee Lifetime Achievement Award sort of, you know, shows him his feet are cemented firmly in place on that yep. walkway of things that have impacted Hollywood. So,
and the best part of all was the pictures. He looked pretty good in them.
He did.
All things considered,
he looked pretty good.
Now he may have a get up and around battery life of only a couple of hours these days. We don't know, but he was looking pretty good.
Enjoy himself
on the red carpet there, and it just gives me hope that he's still going to be here come July, and he's going to get a lot of camera stuck in his face to talk about the new movie,
talking about that logo, talking about that movie, talking about his experiences. Yeah, absolutely. So congratulations, Mr. Gross, well deserved. And if we'll post a couple of photos for people to see onto the show notes so that you can see him accepting that award, but super cool. Congratulations, sir.
Alice, I'm gonna ask you a couple of standard questions, okay? Do you believe in UFOs, astral projections, mental telepathy, ESP, clairvoyance, spirit photography, telekinetic movement, full trance mediums, the Loch Ness Monster, and the theory of Atlantis?
What are you supposed to be, some kind of a cosmonaut?
What has that got to do with it?
With Mr. Ernie Cline, author, screenwriter, fan like us, and I'm so, this has been long in the making. We've wanted Ernie on the podcast since Chris and I started doing this. So, Ernie, we are so glad to have you. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. Thank you guys for having me. Thank you for forgiving me when I flaked out the first two times. But now we have connected. Now we're going to break it down.
I was going to say, I feel like it's fitting. We get to talk to you. I mean, we're sort of lowering the veil on the mystique of releasing this on a Monday, but we're recording this on the eve of Back to the Future Day, so it's pretty fitting to be talking to you on this particular occasion.
Oh, no, it's a twofer, because it's the eve of Back to the Future Day, and it's the day after the last Star Wars trailer. So basically, Ernie should be on some sort of endorphin high right now.
I am, dude. Well, I've been working on a R2 dome vehicle project with my brother. We just he just obtained the finished R2 dome on the day trailer landed. So we're just I'm geeking out.
Oh,
and
man.
Back to the Future, like Doc and Marty, all these commercials with Christopher Lloyd and Michael J. Fox, they've been doing have been hysterical. I'm gonna go buy Pepsi Perfect tomorrow.
Yes.
And then, I filled my DeLorean up at the Texaco station today, and all the, like, I've never had so many offers for people to borrow my car ever. The local TV station just actually emailed me right before we started talking. I know it's last minute, but can we borrow your time machine tomorrow?
Can we have it for the morning news? Wait a minute. Come on, but, guys.
But I think I'm actually going to be on CNN tomorrow. They came. I was having Ecto 88, my Ghostbusting DeLorean, fixed in Houston at the DeLorean shop there. I had the car flatbedded there, and then I usually fly to Houston and pick it up when they're done working on it. And CNN wrote and asked if they could do a story about the car and for Back to the Future Day. And so they flew a camera crew down to Houston and filmed me picking up the car, filmed them working on the car, and then me picking it up and driving it back. So I think that's going to be online tomorrow. So
oh,
I get to show it to the world tomorrow.
We'll post the link for people. Although this is a good segue there, Ernie, because it does kind of overlap with several topics. And for those who might not understand, your first book, Ready Player One, Virtual World, which means Sky's the Limit, and the protagonist has the Ecto 88, which is, can you explain it a bit?
Can I explain Ecto 88? Yes, I can.
And then how that relates to the real world and why we're talking about it?
Yeah, so my first novel, Ready Player One, the protagonist is kind of participating in this, you know, the greatest video game contest in history inside this fully realized virtual world that is actually, you know, thousands of different worlds, all together in a kind of a connected universe, the Star Wars universe right next to the Star Trek universe, next to Firefly, next to, you know, Hogwarts, all in one kind of interconnected virtual space. And this, the protagonist, who's obsessed with 80s pop culture, he kind of mashes up his four favorite 80s super vehicles all into one, Ecto 88, which combines Doc Brown's time machine, the Ghostbusters Ecto 1, Buckaroo Banzai's jet car, and the Knight Industries 2000 kit from Knight Rider, all into one car. And so I put that in the book, and then, you know, just to amuse myself, I'd always wanted to own a DeLorean, but then when I sold my book, it actually created the opportunity for me to finally buy my dream car and then use it to in my author photo and then drive it around on my book tour. So it's like a business expense, the greatest business expense in history. And then I've slowly converted it to be just like Ecto 88 in the book. It has oscillation overthruster, a flux capacitor, a kit scanner embedded in the grill, and I have two neutrino wands mounted on the back, and my Mr. Fusion is mounted on top of my light bar, my Ghostbusters light bar, and then my particle throwers are wired into the Mr. Fusion. So I have Mr. Fusion powering my particle throwers, and I'm pretty sure I'm the only ectomobile in history to do that. If anybody else has wired up particle throwers to a Mr. Fusion on a Ghostbusting DeLorean before me, please contact me.
No, I think we're all stuck in the fission era. You've
yeah. Going green, it's fine. Yeah.
No, yeah. But that is, and I just kind of finished the. I feel like I finished Ecto 88 finally. By adding the kit scanner, it has all the different components that I had dreamed up in the book, and so now it's kind of this recreation of something from the story, and it's like a rolling license violation, Ghostbusters and Back to the Future mashed up, but it's kind of dangerous to drive because like all Ectomobiles, it draws attention, but this one, people see a Ghostbusters DeLorean, it's like too. Their brain doesn't know what to make of it, and usually people start driving erratically because they're trying to photograph it.
So you gotta be careful.
I totally have to be careful. But tomorrow's Back to the Future Day, so I gotta drive it all over town. Every DeLorean is gonna be in that survived. You know, I think there were like 8,000-9,000 originally made, maybe up to 11 all told once all the parts were used. But I think I'm not sure the exact number. They estimate is still on the road, but tomorrow is their day. You know,
it's their day.
It's going to be cool.
I think that that Ready Player One is a good sort of allegory. I mean, it's so we're living in this time where we've got a new Ghostbusters movie coming out, a new Star Wars movie coming out. We've got Back to the Future in the zeitgeist, obviously because of the date that Doc and Marty travel to. We're living in the perfect storm of all of this pop culture stuff. I mean, how did this happen? How are we living this moment right now, Ernie? What's happening to us?
What's happened is everybody who grew up with all that stuff, who was like 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 years old when they saw Star Wars, for the first time or discovered it on video, like everybody who grew up with Star Wars and grew up with Space Invaders and Atari and then Nintendo and Sega and PlayStation, all of that, like those people are all adults now, and they are they vote with their ticket money and what they choose to purchase and they want more Star Wars. And now with Disney, like, it's crazy, with Disney having taken over Star Wars, there's just never going to be. It's going to be nonstop Star Wars
for years to come.
Star Wars movie every year, and like 3 or 4 cartoons, and now like the thing that really makes me feel like Ready Player One predicted something that's already coming about is Disney Infinity. Like you buy this little USB. Device. It's like a base that you place the figurines on, and it reads the data from the figurine, and that character appears inside your Disney Infinity toy box, your virtual space that you can redesign, and you can you can swap it out and have Wally right next to Luke Skywalker, next to Woody from Toy Story or Buzz Lightyear. It's amazing. And that video games can already like allow kids to play inside a virtual space. So when I was writing Ready Player One, I was just kind of predicting the coolest possible future version of the internet. And that's all coming about too. Everybody who grew up kind of imagining virtual reality and seeing it depicted in film, but having not actually come about, those people are actually making, like guys like Palmer Luckey, they're actually ticked off that there's no virtual reality, so they went out and started to make it. And then it started this whole kind of VR revolution. I was lucky enough to write about VR right as it was about to actually come about, much sooner than I anticipated.
Yeah, you foretold it all. So, all right, so you're the person.
Everybody wanted it to happen. Everybody's been waiting for it to happen, and now it's like about to happen. I think it's part of that perfect storm of pop culture you're talking about, like Avengers, nonstop superhero movies, all the. We grew up having to make do with like the Incredible Hulk, Bill Bixby, like TV series, with Thor as a guest star. And now there's, like Avengers is the biggest movie of, it's amazing to see this like geek golden age come about.
What so if you can see into the future, Ernie, can I coin a question from one of your films and ask, what if it sucks? Like, what if these all come out and suck? What happens to us?
Yeah, that's the thing though. Like, I'm a I'm a big lover of, I'm a big fan of like finding something to love in everything and any piece of art, you know, or any attempt to, you know, make a piece of entertainment. There's usually something good to find in it or see in it. And I'm like, but I have high hopes. J.J. Abrams did an amazing job. Like, I don't know that that guy had a movie. I've enjoyed all his films, and he's a there's a reason they've entrusted this holy thing with him. You know, he's like proven that he can handle it, and everybody's was excited to work with him. And I feel like he approached it with the right amount of reverence and just the trailers. Like a lot of people were disappointed by the prequels, and that's because they had just an unrealistic expectations. They wanted to, you know, some movie to help them relive their entire childhood. And for some people, or a lot of people, it did do that, you know. But it and a lot of people are looking for this movie to, you know, do it too. You have to, but I think it's going to be, you know, like what somebody who grew up loving Star Wars, you know, from the very beginning would want in, you know, a sequel to Return of the Jedi. That's the that's, you know, it's pretty amazing time to be a geek.
And as a Ghostbusters fan, do you feel the same way about what Feig and those guys are doing with that film as well? Does it sort of apply to that film and what they're attempting to do?
Have you even been
when they posted that photo of the whole cast, all the girls with their Ecto? You know, it made me so happy. Like they had maintain like the core of what I think Ghostbusters is, and the fact like Bill Murray, after not wanting to go near Ghostbusters for a long time, like immediately wanted to sign on board. And it's Paul Feig, like the guy. The guy's an amazing writer, an amazing filmmaker, and also like the guy behind Freaks and Geeks. Like you couldn't ask for somebody to be more respectful. And the guy just makes, I don't know if you guys saw Spy or any of his recent films. He's just on fire. So I think I'm excited about. And excited. My little girl has always grown up playing Ghostbusters, and now she's going to see all, you know, an all-girl cast of Ghostbusters. It's going to be awesome. I think it's going to, like, reinvigorate the franchise. I know they're working on an animated film, too, involving members of the original cast. So it's more Ghostbusters is good. We've had to get by with, like, comics and homemade Ecto-Cooler recipes for far too long.
The animated one may be rumor, and we may be partially responsible for helping promote that, but yeah, it is something.
I don't know. Made Overtures reach out to me. It seems like that's a real thing that the guys at, you know,
really
Fed Central are working on. Who knows?
Wait, well, sorry. Somebody reached out to you?
I heard it was going on.
Oh, okay. Sorry, Skype glitched out on me, and I thought you were revealing
Ghostbusters film. Right. But I don't know. Maybe who knows? Who knows? Everybody's always working on multiple things. That would get me watching Saturday morning again if there was a new Ghostbusters cartoon. I have the box set of the original. So what's amazing about that is the creator of Babylon 5 like helped codify all the like lingo of Ghostbusters that we know and name all the technology and expand on the Ghostbusters. That's pretty awesome. If a new cartoon could continue to do what you know, do that when they reboot things with the movie.
Yeah, actually, that's a fair point. I was reading somebody's Ghostbusters trivia thing on Imgur, and they were like, "Proton Pack wasn't named until halfway through Ghostbusters 2," and I'm like, "No, wait, that's not right. It's all over the cartoon, isn't it?"
Chris, I remember you telling me that you probably more than anybody, because of your longstanding Ghostbuster fan presence on the internet, have received pictures of people dressing up to play Ghostbusters as kids. Like, I always wanted that to be like your giant coffee table book of nothing but pictures of people playing Ghostbusters.
Back in I know. Day. That'd be a hell of a book at this point, because...
Yeah. Or a Tumblr feed or anything.
I would just...
But you got all those filed away somewhere, right?
Oh, yeah. No, I've been holding on to it.
That's what's what else is going on tomorrow. Back to the Future Day, they're also releasing like a couple documentaries and the 30th anniversary Blu-ray. I had the 25th anniversary Blu-ray, but I'm buying the 30th Blu-ray,
me too,
in case there's new
stuff. God, it's just buy it again, it's fine, just do it.
That's like, yeah, it's like Star Wars Blu-rays. Now I'm gonna have to get an ultimate edition, the Star Wars Blu-rays with the special extras.
I stuck with my DVDs, so I'm fully prepared to jump to the 30th anniversary Blu-rays.
You missed out. You missed out on the... Well, I guess you can see it all on the internet.
Exactly. Like, I missed nothing.
Did you see the Hoth? You missed the delight of me watching all the Hoth cutscenes. Remember getting my Blu-rays and watching those Hoth cutscenes of the terrible. Like, oh, now I see why they couldn't make these giant Snoke creatures work. This is a disaster. Cut this whole sequence. Beautiful stuff like that. The Ghostbusters Blu-rays are pretty awesome in that regard too. I love the special where they recreate the Ecto.
Yeah.
Refurbish the Ecto, and Dan Aykroyd then comes on to the shop and drives it. That's like one of my favorite Blu-ray extras on anything of all time.
But Ghostbusters is still missing like that, the coveted Eric Stoltz footage for Back to the Future. You know, we're missing like the deleted scenes from Ghostbusters 2 and stuff that was on the Criterion disc, that first disc, and things that we haven't seen, much like the Wampa in Empire Strikes Back. It's like, man, where is Lewis Tully's cousin and things we've seen photos of?
That's the thing, though. It's Ghostbusters 2. Stuff that actually made it into Ghostbusters 2 is pretty awful. Like, you don't necessarily need to. it was on TV the other day. I was slipping past it. I just forgot. There's some pretty awful special effects. Just shameful. There's some shameful stuff in Ghostbusters 2. There's beautiful stuff too, but I can see why Bill Murray especially felt sore for a while. I know some people love Ghostbusters 2. Where are you guys at on the Ghostbusters 2 fence?
I'm okay with it.
You're okay with it?
Yeah, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, oh, I don't know. The kid and the baby on the ledge sequence. How is he standing up? There's just stuff that doesn't doesn't jive with ghosts.
It's right. A movie filled with ghosts, and that's what trips you up.
I don't know. It caught me the other day, guys. Just that I saw that stop to watch that sequence, and I was like, wow. But like, it's not like when you stop to watch Ghostbusters, just every frame of it, you know. Even the stuff with Ron Jeremy is awesome.
Oh, that's not true. Actually, we were talking in a previous podcast, this week's maybe, about Mr. Alex Newburn, who helped out his buddy Dan Wallace on the Ultimate Visual Guide. And I know for a fact that that guy has gone through Ghostbusters 2 frame by frame. To the extent that I copped in on a thread once, and for example, the desk lamp, Peter's desk lamp in the fire hall, it shows up in his apartment in Ghostbusters 2. Like, it's just, there's stuff in 2 if you go looking.
Well, no, there's beautiful stuff, you know, throughout 2, but there's some, I don't know.
I've always taken the stance that it's not that it's bad, it's that it's a disappointment because it didn't do anything new. It basically kind of reset itself back to, you know, in order to reset the stage for the first movie, right? Giant thing walking.
We had like amazing Ghostbuster stories on Saturday morning, like with the animated, like every, like lots of really well written stuff. And I think it felt like they had to compete with the animated stories a little bit. It wasn't as good as like some of them, but I don't know.
Oh, no, especially the Straczynski ones, right?
Yeah, I don't know. You guys have made me rethink my position. I'm gonna go. I have it on Blu-ray. I'm gonna go rewatch Ghostbusters 2.
That's two for two. I changed Dan Amrick's mind too.
Yes! we just sold like, a copy of the.
You can revisit it. You're like, oh, how bad can it be? They do use their proton packs once. There is a sing-along. The Statue of Liberty. How bad could it be?
It's not 100% gold, but it's got some shining moments.
It never can be. It's not,
no, that's the problem, yeah. But in your opinion then, and this is kind of, you're on here because, A, you're one of us. But you also, you know, you're vetted in the writing trenches too, so you have kind of a perspective that I certainly don't have. I've never had to sit down and write a book, and I've never tried to turn it into a screenplay. So from your point of view, what's the pros to the new movie in that they're basically, well, I mean, they're calling it a reboot, right? Like they've
all the Venkman's back, Stance's back, Zeddemore is making a cameo. I'm like so happy about all that. I feel like they're gonna. I'm interested. I've managed to not when are we going to get a trailer for this? I don't know anything about what the story is. All I've seen is like the still photos of the proton pack and the traps and then the girls with their ecto.
Yeah, I recently found out when we're going to get a trailer, and I'm sworn to secrecy.
Oh, okay.
But we do know it's going to happen before the end of the year, so you don't have to wait too long or anything.
So you don't have to wait too long.
I'm going
to
go see a new Star Wars movie with Han Solo and Chewbacca in it, and then there's going to be a trailer for Ghostbusters before it. And then I'm going to be...
Is that your bet? Because Troy and I've lost already, because I bet that there was an outside chance it might show up in front of Goosebumps around Halloween. And that didn't happen.
Get that Goosebumps audience.
Well, I went for thematic. I thought that. It's Sony and it's thematic. Troy's right. Put his debt money down on Spectre next month.
Yeah, I thought the allure of Bond for Sony, for the corporate synergy. But I don't know. Maybe.
So Ernie's breaking out of the box. Ernie's decided that Sony's not going to stick to Sony. Sony's going to put their money down with Lucasfilm Disney.
Oh, I guess no. I guess they do. Studios do do that. I would just think that that's going to be the biggest movie audience. You know,
that is true.
And theater owners, it's more theater owners choose like what they think they're going to be their big movies. And that's going to be one of the big movies next summer.
Yeah,
I can't wait.
I got to
take my Ecto to New York and do the New York tour before that comes out. Because it's going to be like pre-reboot, you know, pre-Ghostbusters 3 and, you know, BC and AD. It's like going to be a new era of Ghostbusters.
That's very true.
Yeah. Generation of fans.
All right. Well, okay. Everybody's money's in. Everybody's pretend money is in. I've lost. My pot's gone.
Yeah, you lost, and Ernie predicted Disney Infinity, so I have a feeling we're going to be bowing to Ernie here.
They don't have VR goggles hooked up to Disney Infinity, but that's happening next year.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yet.
And then haptic suits, and then all of it is coming.
Now, you're working on a sequel, are you not?
I have outlines for a possible trilogy, two sequels to Ready Player One. Right now, I'm a screenplay adaptation of my second novel, Armada.
Now, I got a bone to pick with you, Mr. Ernie Klein.
What?
Armada is a little Ghostbusters light. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I guess it is Ghostbusters light. Well, you know, I was doing space travel. I was doing another thing. There's plenty of Ghostbusters in Ready Player One.
That is true.
They're going to make it into the movie, but I'm going to lobby for it.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting one to follow because you, my friend, created the ultimate nerd reference book, which has then probably become history's greatest rights challenge in movie history.
It's a clearance nightmare.
To everybody but the guy who ended up directing it. I think anybody would sign on and let him use their...
there's a guy you got to wine and dine if he's going to leave Raiders out. Come on.
Yeah. Well, no, I get that. Like, he's already done that. And if you've watched 1942, that's full of references to other projects. There's a tribute. It opens with a tribute to Jaws. There's a tribute to Duel in there.
That's true.
Took him, you know, weren't the biggest fans of 1942, which I think is a masterpiece. But he... So I totally understand that you and people, critics especially, will any artist who is too self-referential or critics or, you know, feel like you're patting yourself on the back, and audience members might, you know, I totally get that, but that doesn't rule out the Ecto, it doesn't rule out the DeLorean because that's true. A film he produced. I think we're just talking about films he directed,
and it's pretty critical. Now I just want to go on record here though that Mr. Ernie Klein has stepped in. The guy who stepped into our ball court and poo pooed Ghostbusters 2 is on record as saying that 1942 is a masterpiece. So
if you lock, if it's Desert Island Time and I got to take one, I got to take 1942 or Ghostbusters 2. I'm going to go with 1942.
You're going to do 1942? Okay, yeah. Fair play.
I don't want to have to watch. I don't know, guys. Let me watch Ghostbusters 2 again right now.
We'll revisit with you in the new year to see how you like Ghostbusters 2 and whether you won the trailer bet or not.
Yeah.
Okay.
One time I was in the room with in the same room in a movie theater with Bill Murray, and somebody asked him about it was like during I think a premiere for The City of Ember, and he showed up. And somebody asked him about Ghostbusters and strapping on a proton pack, and And he said that line that he always says, was like, well, the scars from Ghostbusters 2 have almost healed. Almost. we see how long it took for him. I don't know if he's going to strap on a proton pack. That would be great, though. That would be like Luke Skywalker firing up his lightsaber again, is Venkman strapping on a proton pack. It's going to be a missed opportunity if the old heroes are not called on to help the new heroes, if you know what I'm saying.
I know what you're saying. I don't know if we will, but... Well, fingers crossed.
Yeah. I love those pictures of Bill rolling his suitcase onto the set, though. Did you see those?
Yeah. Well, sort of. We Troy and I are in this weird state where we have to try and inform those fans that wish to be informed while at the same time trying not to see too much ourselves. So
trying to keep some mystery behind it. Yeah.
It's just tough. Bill Murray rolling his suitcase towards.
Yeah, no, I think I literally read like the first one that popped up that said, cameo.
Being careful.
Make a note, Troy. We're gonna have to say for the lead and record, people who are worried about spoilers may have to be ready to plug their ears in the middle of this one. Yeah,
Ernie, we've been trying our damnedest to. there was a cameo that was filmed that we're not going to tell you about because you're not supposed to know about. We just talk in circles.
What do you guys talk about? Like, that's the thing. If you're listening to a Ghostbusters podcast and you expect to hear some Ghostbusters spoilers, that's why people are tuning in, man.
Well, that's a good point.
Yeah.
No, I see. We went the other way.
All right.
Basically, Ernie's come in and he's poo-pooed Ghostbusters 2 and he's let the cat out of the bag. On a whole bunch of cameos. Really, this interview is just a complete wash.
Cut that out. This is not live.
Maybe we'll beep you or something.
Oh, yeah.
Bleep you. Or throw a Slimer sound effect over you or something like that.
Yes. Are we going to get Ecto Cooler back? That's the real question.
Well, that's ramping up hard. There was an article I posted there yesterday that somebody put forth the argument that there's a groundswell and if Coke doesn't, especially in the wake of Pepsi and with Pepsi Perfect and stuff like that, surely Coke can slap a Slimer on the box, right?
Yeah. And they got a new movie behind it. Like, now's the time.
One of the first things Troy and I ever talked about was we kind of talked about that as possible merch. And our argument was since that, High C packages their drink boxes all wrapped together in those groups of eight. You basically, on each box, you pick a different Slimer from the video game to each of the movies to the cartoons, and you slap each one on the box. So each box is like a different Slimer from the Ghostbusters franchise.
Yes, variety.
Exactly.
Variety pack of Slimer Ecto Cooler. I love it.
Are you listening, Coca-Cola?
Are you listening? I would be behind this. Maybe I could be. This could be the one of the causes that I champion.
All right.
Back Ecto Cooler. Now's the time. I could run on that platform.
Oh, and you'd win. That's the.
But the Alamo Draft House showed Ghostbusters. They show Ghostbusters all the time. But they showed it for the 30th anniversary, and had people run out dressed as ghosts and stuff during the screening, and they were serving Ghostbusters themed snacks, but no Ecto Cooler. It was shameful. But you can find the recipe. If you guys try the homemade recipe Ecto Cooler, I don't need to take over the podcast with talk about this drink. But
well, why not? I mean, that's why we brought you on here. And yes, the answer is yes. We have oh gosh, I'm going to get it wrong. Is it the Chicago guys
trying? I want to say it was the Chicago guys that posted up their alcoholic version that I've tried. That's the one that I've done.
Oh no, I mean the one that makes to recreate the original.
And there is, I don't remember who did that one though, but I remember that one was borderline alchemical sorcery in terms of just a dash of mango juice and
some spirit gum and some stuff that is not readily available, but
an unopened jar of cranberry juice over it. And
was that like
the authenticity, fellas? I appreciate the attention to detail. This person's trying to create a lost flavor for you. See, that's the question. Even if Coke went back and did it, is it like the Saturn V rockets? Do they even have the plans? Do they have the formula for Ecto Cooler, or was it discarded along the way?
I don't know.
That's the shout out to Matt at Dinosaur Dracula, because he was kind of the first to like set up this, plant the flag with that article he wrote ages ago, where he like tracked down one of the last boxes like still for sale in the and.
Did he have it analyzed?
And well, no. I seem to recall he went through the ingredients on the side and determined that it was basically a hair's breadth off of some other flavor they have. So recreating it really shouldn't be that hard.
All right.
Between all the people reverse engineering it and his record of, you know, what was in the old stuff, I think there's no excuse.
Investigate this too. Right as soon as we're done podcasting, I'm going to go watch Ghostbusters 2 and try this homemade Ecto Cooler. Let's see if maybe the verdict can be changed.
Right, we'll get an email tomorrow. The movie sucked, and this thing tastes terrible.
Yeah, this drink is delicious.
Oh, there you go.
I drank 10 of these, and the only good parts of Ghostbusters 2 when I had to get up and go take a leap. That's too harsh. I'll stick around for the courtroom scene and the Statue of Liberty sing-along and the little kid standing up on the ledge. The kid they can't walk yet, who's standing on the ledge.
You're really hung up on that.
Horses like raise him up.
That's going to be the thumbnail for this episode. I want you to know now.
Get a screenshot. That was the part that I unfortunately tuned in. You know, you're flipping channels. I'm like, oh, Ghostbusters 2. Let me stop and watch here as this tiny baby Oscar is abducted from this window ledge. Just watch it frame by frame. That's the if you're going to watch any part of Ghostbusters frame by frame, that's the sequence.
It's at the
filmmaking.
You've picked a loose thread, and if you start pulling at it, You have to move along to.
I wish they. Why don't they? They should edit the loose thread for television. You know what I'm saying?
Because then you got to ask yourself, why is Janos now a ghost nanny? And
man,
what happened to the ghost nanny after the sequence is over? Because we never see it again.
Has anyone, I'm sure you have, Chris, have you examined early drafts of Ghostbusters 2, Ramis, Aykroyd drafts, to see if there was studio meddling, studio notes?
No, you know, I've never seen one.
See,
never, ever.
I want to see the draft. I want to see what they shot, and then I want to see, like, what, you know, I want to see if there was meddling. I want to know the definitive.
Get
to the bottom of this.
I have a sneaking suspicion that Paul at Spook Central probably has an earlier draft, but I've never bothered him. I should basically be a complete pain in the ass and
get that. See if I can.
Yeah,
edit this part out, but I'm in. If there money needs to exchange hands to get an early draft of Ghostbusters 2.
Okay, I'm leaving. We're leaving that part in. Ernie's going to pay for a copy, Paul.
Somebody has an early pre-suck draft of Ghostbusters 2.
Well, see, this is the thing. Like, when you can go to a comic shop and find, like, bins of scripts, like, you know, unofficial, you know, printed out, like, copies of scripts to movies, Ghostbusters never shows up. Like, it's one or two.
Oh, and yeah. People
anywhere.
Hold on to those. There's got to be drafts online. And Script City, it's a place in L.A. you can order scripts. They've got them all digitized now. I think you get PDFs of them. So I can, I'll find it. I'll get to the bottom of this. While I'm watching Ghostbusters 2 and drinking my homemade Ecto Cooler, I'm going to download the script.
Right. Okay.
Compare and contrast and see how what was written and what was executed.
All right. So now you're coming back in January to talk about how you thought Ghostbusters 2 was, whether you got the Ecto Cooler going, whether you won the trailer bet, and whether you found a script.
I might not be coming back from this. I might not be a Ghostbusters fan after what I'm about to put myself through. I might be like, you know, I decided the first one. Now, see, I can never do that, though. Because the first one is just, like I said, it's just perfection.
Yeah, no, it's, and that's, well, obviously that's why this podcast exists.
Yes, it's true. Well, have we covered everything? We got to the bottom. You see, you guys are 2 hours behind me. I know you're all fresh as bunnies, but it's getting late here.
It's getting late. Chris and I are going to talk a little bit about a Halloween double feature, talking about our favorite sort of event movies for the season. I feel like we'd be remiss to not ask you, Ernie, if you have like a good like double or triple feature of films that you always line up for Halloween.
Oh, yeah. You know, for Halloween. Let's see. Well, you know, Ghostbusters 2, is the first thing I put on. No, I watch Ghostbusters, and The Thing is probably one of my favorite scary movies. I'll put on The Thing and Big Trouble in Little China. I'll probably watch Escape from New York. If I watch those two, then I got to watch Escape from New York. So those are a good October.
There you go.
It puts me in a John Carpenter mood. And Halloween is always on. Although I saw Halloween when I was too young, when I was a kid, it gave me nightmares. Michael Myers. Jason in Space, that's the one I got to see. Jason X.
It's
on a spaceship. That's a good Halloween.
Now, are you like us, Ernie, and do you, in your head, have you linked Ghostbusters and Big Trouble in Little China because of the fire hall?
No. That was not. Yeah. I just linked them as both being awesome 80s action movies with, you know, that.
A touch of supernatural.
Yes, with heroes who are not quite as sharp as they think they are. They're facing down powers that are far beyond them and their comprehension. And they're like, which I love that, you know, kind of 80s bravado heroes where their own, you know, kind of self-assurance that's unwarranted helps carry the day. That's good stuff.
Well, we should wrap up then and encourage people to go find your two books are out, Ready Player One and Armada. Should definitely be read.
Listen to the audiobooks too. The audiobooks are fantastic.
And if you're too young and you don't know what a book is, go get the Will Wheaton audiobooks, which are awesome.
Yeah, it's like a one man radio play of like he acts. You know, there's like in Armada, he does like one scene, like eight different characters, different voices, genders, nationalities. He's jumping back and forth between all of them. The dude's amazing.
We can spot you, and if people want to get a look at the Ecto 88 in Game Over, which I think is on Xbox, etc.
Yeah, it's on Netflix, it's on YouTube, and I'm going to – and Ecto88.com. My car has a website.
Exactly. There you go. And we're two summers away from the movie. Is that right?
That's to Christmas.
Christmas 2017?
Oh, okay. Christmas release. Excellent.
Yeah.
Perfect. But then the question then remains, then what's up next, Ernie?
My third book, Top Secret.
Apparently, you're calling it Top Secret?
Than the last book. So I'll take that under advisement.
Will the antagonist of the second book have his own vehicle made up of the A-Team van? I don't know. I'm running out of vehicles. Riptide.
Guys, Ferrari.
The Screaming Mimi from Riptide.
The Screaming Mimi from Riptide. It had a helicopter built in. You guys saw Kung Fury, right?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. When Kung Fury goes to heaven and he's got like the helicopter from Mask. See, Kung Fury's heaven, I think, is probably my heaven, too.
I think you're probably right.
I was like, I knew even before he said it was heaven. I'm like, that's got to be heaven. This must be heaven. So I think the A-Team van, Screaming Mimi from Riptide. I mean, like, not that's deep pockets, Chris. Not a lot of people know Riptide. I appreciate it. But it had a computer hacker and a robot, so I'm tuning in.
I know. I think actually that might be the foundation of our communications there, going back a decade.
Riptide
is bizarre deep cuts of 80s television. Oh, yeah,
yes.
We're so glad to have had you, Ernie. We really appreciate you taking some time. I know it's late, so we'll definitely have to have you back now that we have a couple of bets on the table as well.
It's true.
Thanks so much again, Ernie.
Thank you guys. I appreciate it, man.
Back to the future, man.
So let's chat about our favorite Halloween film. Speaking of, you know, warm bellies sitting and you're drinking some cider and you're waiting for trick-or-treaters to come to your door. You've got the bowl of candy at the ready. What are you watching while you're sitting there hanging out and eating that candy corn and basically, you know, causing a dentist's nightmare? You know, what's on the TV? What's playing in the background? And Chris, yeah. And I thought it would be fun to sort of talk about our, obviously, Ghostbusters. You're listening to a Ghostbusters podcast, so it's on the list. That goes without saying. But, you know, other films akin to Ghostbusters that you are sort of like your annual favorites to watch during Halloween. What do you guys usually watch at the Stewart household, Chris?
Or maybe not even necessarily akin, just what's that puts you in the Halloween spirit, right?
Yeah, what's, I mean, you know, Christmas time you have certain movies and Thanksgiving, yeah. You know, certain movies. Halloween is no different, you know, there's... there's many out there, and there's and you and I were talking about this before, Chris. There's, you know, you got your scary movies, you've got your Halloween feeling comedies that have that sort of dark humor to them, and then you've got, you know, big costume things like Tim Burton's Batman, where it's like, oh man, that's it's not really a Halloween movie, but it's a big gothic movie with super cool costumes. So
it fits well enough. The one thing that I don't do much of, at least not on Halloween night, is I don't really get into the super scary, loud, or gory ones, just because our living room is literally right next to the door. So, you know, it's never good to be scarring, you know, the 4-year-old on their first Halloween out with screams of mutilation
and blood and guts. Exactly.
So that leaves certain things like that I absolutely love, like Tom Savini redid Night of the Living Dead with Patricia Tallman. Love that one. But of course, you know, it's a zombie movie and there's screaming and gore, so that leads. So I kind of veer towards things like let's see here, I think you and I think everybody's kind of on the same page here, but there's a lot of good stuff like Beetlejuice.
Oh yeah, Beetlejuice, that's a good, I didn't even think about Beetlejuice, but that's a great Halloween film. Absolutely,
that's a really fun one to watch. Frighteners, I always have on ready.
Frighteners is great.
Frighteners is badly underrated. And I keep trying to explain to people this because it's kind of like, I guess it's properly a cult film. It found an audience afterwards, but most people don't really have a regard for it. And I recall when it came out in cinemas, and I can tell you exactly why. And that's because it was the first time I realized that marketing machines at studios don't always know what to do with a movie.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. Why do you think that film didn't do so well? And it was people didn't know what it was, right? It was sort of marketed.
It was marketed as a wacky Michael J. Fox comedy romp, right? All the trailers were cut as, remember Michael Keaton? Well, here he is. Woo! You know, funny. Boo! And ghost spooky. And, you know, with a touch of, remember Ghostbusters? Kind of like that. And really, you know, it's got some existential horror and dread going on. And the concept of dying and just being stuck and the ghosts deteriorate over time. Like, the older the ghosts are, the worse shape they're in. And,
Michael J. Fox's character is kind of a deplorable human being at the beginning of that film as well. You know, he's sort of exploiting people for their money and using the fact that he has communication skills with these ghosts to basically con people.
And just when you think you've got your head wrapped around it, they throw Jeffrey Combs in as the world's creepiest FBI agent. Oh my God. Danvers, Agent Danvers, if I recall correctly. And oh my God, just Sheriff.
Twin Peaks kind of like weirdness.
Sheriff, you're intruding upon my territorial bubble. or of course the classic, what, my body is a roadmap of pain. It's like, this is not the family ties comedy romp I was promised.
What is this?
It's a very much a black comedy, and I love it to death. But so, actually, there's a good recommendation right there. If you have not seen it, people, you really should, because it does share quite a bit of similarity with Ghostbusters. You know, it's definitely a wit movie more than a jokey joke movie.
Right.
It's, you know, it's kind of a dry comedy mixture with horror. Very black
Peter
comedy.
Jackson film too. That's the other thing about it. Yeah. You look back and you go, wow, that was one of Peter Jackson's first films.
Well, and it's the one that helped him, because I believe at the time he was starting to try to get Lord of the Rings off the ground. And part of his pitch was, look, my team here can do all this high-level computer stuff. And that was their first foray into it, was doing the computer effects for the Weta team for Frighteners. So.
Yeah, here's how you can augment the reality with the CG effects, and it's a little bit of a blueprint for what was to come from him. So
I got more, but you do one now.
And Beetlejuice, I mean, we kind of skimmed over Beetlejuice, that's a no brainer. I mean, you've got the gothic Tim Burton feeling plus all of the sort of goth I'm just picturing Winona Ryder's character as a lot of the girls that I knew in high school that really dug Halloween, you know? Yeah, Beetlejuice is sort of a quintessential Halloween movie. I can't believe I didn't even think of that for my list. That was, man, geez, I feel terrible for not putting that on there. But
well, there's just so many. I mean, that's really what we're trying to do here is just kind of give people a personal taste. And with any luck, we're suggesting stuff that maybe not everybody's tried. So
throw it in the Netflix queue. But yeah, I feel like... you know, we kind of stick to the creepy horror films for Halloween just because it's, I mean, obviously we end up watching things like The Great Pumpkin and, you know, the sort of, like you have to, it's like at Christmas time, you have to watch it, the Charlie Brown Christmas, and Halloween, you've got to watch Great Pumpkin. But we usually stick to stuff that, you know, like The Exorcist or Alien or things that, you know, kind of throw you off and sort of put you in that creepy mood. But yeah,
tension. I mean, lots of tension is what you mean. Yeah, okay. I mean,
not necessarily blood and gore. Alien, there, of course, is the blood and gore to the extent that, you
not
know,
a lot
the,
when you think
the
about it.
The chestburster is something that's completely traumatizing, obviously. Yes. But yeah, it's mainly more environmental. It's creepy. There's this thing in the shadows. It's very much a haunted house movie, and so it works pretty well. And plus, it's sci-fi and it's incredible design. So I feel that, you know, I watch it and there's so much in there as opposed to like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, where you're like, it's just a house on a farm. You know, at least this, you've got the Nostromo, and there's a lot to kind of take in. And then I feel like Death Proof is kind of one that we always come back to. You know, the of the two Grindhouse films, Death Proof, for whatever reason, has left a lasting impression. Maybe it's Mary Elizabeth Winstead. Don't tell my wife that. I don't know. But it's also, I mean, it's a kind of a common thread of these films is Kurt Russell. You know, Kurt Russell shows up in things like Big Trouble in Little China and this film, and you kind of...
Right.
I don't know. For some reason, he goes hand in hand with that same Halloween feeling.
Yeah, I never thought about that, but he does fit really well. So, Death Proof, although before we continue, small aside there, when it comes to Halloween, I technically go the other way with Rodriguez's, which is...
Planet Terror.
Planet Terror, thank you. Just because it's, you know, a bit more zombie-ish sort of thing, whereas Death Proof is a great kind of... Well, it's one long car chase.
Yeah, it's but it's like a Twilight Zone episode too.
That's
that
true.
It's
yeah.
This sort of relentless, you know, like when you're watching Duel and the truck is sort of this entity that becomes the bad guy, or like Christine, you know, the
right. The sort another of, excellent pick for yes. Halloween. Well, I see you did say you kind of went for the creepy or the tension one, so that makes sense. But
yeah,
there's that. Big Trouble in Little China, The Thing. The Thing is a fantastic one to watch.
Yes, and even the sequel that they just recently made, which sort of kind of got swept under the rug, but I thought actually was a worthy follow-up, to be completely honest.
The follow-up lead-in? Yes.
Exactly. When you see that dog run off and you go, oh my God, what happens?
Yeah, very much. Well, that's the thing. I actually said when I watched it, I wasn't able to catch it in the theater, so I watched it on home video, and I immediately went over to The Thing afterwards. Like, I don't know what it is. Like, I remember at the time people were kind of cold to it, or a little, you know, or at worst savage towards it, because, you know, how dare they touch on the
it's a remake, it's a reboot, it's a the same, hey, it's
of course
it's,
we again, have no frame of reference to, for anything like this, so
if only we did.
Let's see here. Well, then you like creepy. This is a bit older, but I think it's a fantastic one you might like. Have you ever watched the original Village of the Damned?
No, I haven't.
You might like that.
So why? Tell me what about Village of the Damned is something that should pique my interest.
It's okay. Well, are you familiar with the premise?
For people that don't know, refresh our memories.
Okay, so it's based on a Wyndham novel. The guy who did the Chrysalids. No, people might not necessarily know that one. Day of the Triffids.
You
probably know that one and all. This one was based on what's called the Midwich Cuckoos. And, of course, a cuckoo being, you know, the cuckoo bird putting their egg in another bird's nest, right? So what it is, and this is in the first first act of the film. It's a small village in England, quaint village in the, I guess, 50s, early 60s. And just literally at the same, all at the same time, one day, everybody in the village passes out, like goes to sleep. And the army shows up, realizes like there's a measurable feel to the effect. Like they walk a soldier up the road and he gets 20 yards up and then just falls over asleep. Like they actually know where the limits are. And then all of a sudden it just goes away. And then more alarmingly, within a couple of weeks, they realize all the women are pregnant.
Ooh, and no.
The kids that are born, well, you know, it takes off from there. And it's, you know, it's a little dry because it's, you know, this British horror sci-fi, which means it's a, you know, it's not a, not only that, I mean, even from the era, the 50s and 60s, they're not quite as bombastic as we're used to these days, but the premise is crazy and the way it plays out is crazy.
All right, we'll have to check that one out.
I recommend that, that one. Good... Find that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
And let me see here. They did a remake. I think John Carpenter did the remake. So depending on your tastes, I think you might be okay if you watch the remake. I mean, it's
watch got Chris... the Carpenter. I mean, at least you know the music's going to be good because it's the Carpenter music. So
he's doing a live one at the Hollywood Bowl or something. I forget.
That sounds right. I mean, they've been doing a lot of those live screenings here at the Hollywood Bowl.
No, not live screenings. He's performing. Like here's an orchestra. Go do your music.
It's not even like to a movie. They're not playing the score of the film. It's just him playing his music.
It's him and an orchestra doing all of his famous stuff. I'm like, that's
unbelievable.
Crazy pants. I mean, well, it sounds awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, but at the same time, then I think of, you know, like, well, what's Halloween, right? Like, not exactly a full orchestra kind of song, but.
No, yeah, I mean it's probably him up there with a synthesizer, quite honestly. But wow, all right, that's cool. I had no idea about that. Maybe we'll have to go check that out too. But
Carpenter's a good list, actually. I mean, I know we were trying to go through the Kurt Russell ones. I can't think of any other.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, Kurt Russell. Halloween, we didn't even, you know.
But yeah,
the Carpenter, the namesake of the holiday itself. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, Halloween definitely. I have a real soft spot, almost slightly more than Halloween, to be honest, for Prince of Darkness.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's been a while since I've seen Prince of Darkness. That's one of those ones I saw, you know, like in high school and you're not supposed to be watching, or it's like junior high school and you're like, wait a minute,
yeah.
Should I be watching this?
It's, ooh, that's got a lot of stuff going on that kind of messes with your head. That one I really recommend. Alice Cooper has a cameo in it, so hey, go for it.
Yeah, exactly. The king of Halloween. Man, I'm trying. I mean, would Escape from New York wouldn't really be a Halloween film, though?
But there's room for really... post-apocalyptic. I think you could.
Yeah, yeah.
You could argue it a bit. Well, let's put it this way: Snake Plissken is possibly one of the best costumes ever. So
yep. There you go. I mean, it's again, if we keep costumes in mind, yeah, absolutely.
I am the king of New York. sorry, I can't do Kurt Russell, but I could probably dress up as Donald Pleasance.
I think that, I mean, that's all the Kurt Russell films that sort of come to mind, I guess.
Yeah.
So, I mean, at least there's a good couple in there that
Carpenter does tend to run away with it, though, when you think about it, like The Fog.
Yep, The Fog, his Dracula. What was his Dracula called? It was like Dracula 2000 or
no,
something.
No, he
wasn't like
Dracula 2000. That was a different one, which is actually kind of fun in its own right. No, it was the one with Woods as the vampire. The Catholic Church has their own team of irredeemable badasses hunting vampires. What was it? Was it just vampires? I think it was John Carpenter's
Vampires. Was it
vampires?
Just vampires? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah,
that one breaks the gore rule because that one has, let's just say, a bisection
is involved. That's,
I mean, the thing does have a little bit of gore in it too, but
sci-fi monster gore. That's
They Live. I didn't. Okay, so I'm cheating now. I'm actually looking at Carpenter, but yeah, They Live is a fantastic choice for Halloween.
That's a great one. That's a really good one. And actually, this year of all years, everybody, if you haven't seen it, you should watch it. Just because we lost Rowdy Roddy Piper there, who contrary to stereotype, turned out for the guy who's one of the biggest heels in wrestling history is apparently one of the the awesomest guys ever. So
and it's so good in They Live. I mean, it's you've inevitably seen clips from it, but Halloween, Escape from New York, The Fog, obviously really good. Dark Star. I forgot that he was involved in Dark Star.
Dark Star is not a Halloween movie.
No, it's not. It's neither fun, is Black Moon Rising, but of a similar vein.
Did he do The Mouth of Madness?
I don't know.
Was that
know.
Carpenter?
I don't see it immediately on his... no, I don't believe he did. Eyes Who of War of Mars. Better Late Than Never.
Ghost of Mars was actually fun. I don't know Ghosts how Halloween would make it, but...
Isn't Ice Cube in Ghost of Mars, if I remember correctly?
Ice Cube and Natasha Henstridge.
Yeah. Oh, and Jason Statham. Pam Grier.
Grier, Jason Statham. Carradine from Revenge of the Nerds.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
It's in there.
Joanna Cassidy from Blade Runner. Rosemary Forsyth. Wow.
Yeah.
This is just turning into a Carpenter love fest. Is all that's happening, which is okay. I mean, it's deservedly so. But
okay, well, it should go down. Pretty much, you should, if you haven't seen John Carpenter, go see John Carpenter movies. They're always, even at their quote unquote worst, and like so, Ghost of Mars is not exactly one of his highest rated ones. It's B movie awesomeness across the board.
Yeah, I mean, it's if you're a fan of Ghostbusters, you've kind of have to be a fan of Carpenter. It's one of those, like, if you like peanut butter, you have to like jelly on the same sandwich. Like, they go together hand in hand. So let's see, what else haven't we hit? We've talked about Carpenter and Beetlejuice and sort of the animated features.
Do you watch a lot of the old classic stuff?
I mean, we usually watch it. I mean, the good news is that they do the Twilight Zone marathons, so we do a lot of Twilight Zone.
Oh, you Americans! I'm jealous of that. Yeah, you have two things. You have the Twilight Zone marathon, a couple of times a year, don't you? There's the Halloween one,
they do Halloween, and then they do it at New Year's. New Year's, I've never understood why New Year's, but you know, I'm not complaining. Don't get me wrong.
And then at Thanksgiving, you have your MST3K marathon. So
yes, which was online last year, which was pretty cool that it was back and you could actually watch it again.
You could watch it again. The older ones. The funny part is oh boy, that's a terrible. Verbal crutch. The funny thing is, there's nothing funny about it. I was filling space there for a second. I got to catch myself there.
Are you going the Hitchcock route? Is that where you're heading toward, or no?
No, I was going classic. In that, I have room in my heart, so to speak, as a cinephile for things like Village of the Damned that I mentioned, or The Ghost and Mr. Chicken. You know what I mean? Like there's that. Yeah. 50s, 60s era of black and white that I'm good with. And then I admit I have a hard time. I do enjoy the early decades, the first decades of Hollywood, but at that point it's almost art appreciation then, like Dracula and Frankenstein and all that do not scare me. They never did, even as a kid.
Yeah, the Universal Monsters never really had that oomph.
They are fantastic movies, but there's just something that generationally shifted, and it just...
Yeah, just not scary at all, yeah.
I do love them, though. Actually, what I love more, though, is the Abbott and Costello meets the Wolfman and stuff like that, or... actually, not all of them were great. Abbott and Costello meets the Mummy was not super awesome, but you know, Abbott and Costello meets Frankenstein and stuff. Though those were really fun to watch.
Oh yeah, you know that just reminded me, and it's not a classic. you know, of that same generation. But man, we didn't talk about the Addams Family. Any of the original show and or the you know, the Barry Sonnenfeld films that came out in the late 90s. So good.
I'll tell you a little secret here. I have the Vic Mizzy soundtrack on my my phone.
Oh, really?
To the Addams, the original Addams Family.
That's the Mamushka and the like.
Yeah. Well, actually, there's a funny thing. Like, if you're not going for the generic CDs with, you know, thunder and ooh, spooky noises and all that, and if you're tired of like the quote unquote Halloween party music, like Now This Is Halloween. Actually, I don't think that ever came up on their news things, but they put
out, we never really talked about that, but yeah, the party albums that always have the Monster Mash and Ghostbusters.
And you know, Rockwell, Somebody's Watching Me, all great songs, but I mean, you hear them.
Just the, yeah, the usual, just the usual generic songs.
Go find a copy of Vic Mizzy's Addams Family soundtrack and his soundtrack for, speaking of which, The Ghost of Mr. Chicken, at a minimum. He's got a sound. It's very strange. Mostly involving a harpsichord sound, and I don't know. There's something somewhere between Halloween and lost my train of thought there. There's some, the music kind of lies somewhere between Halloween and that space age bachelor pad music, if that makes any sense to you.
Like,
Summer's right in the middle is the Vic Mizzy stuff, and if you just play that out, like, it's just, it's not creepy, it's not goofy hilarious, it's just this, and it's this it's got character, I guess. It's got some real Halloween flavor to it that's hard to describe. Actually, hit YouTube, just type in, you know, Addams Family Vic Mizzy, and then listen to the stuff that comes up. And
I want to say, and I was desperately, while you were talking, trying to find, because I think that, like, Varese Sarabande, one of those, actually just released a compilation of, that came with the Vic Mizzy, you know, from the, here it is, Vic Mizzy from the TV show. Then it came with the score from Addams Family and Addams Family Values. It was like a 3-pack.
Oh, nice.
If you can get that, man, that's because the score for those films, too, is just fantastic. Yeah. It's that same sort of, like, Danny Elfman, if that's what you've got playing in the background at your party to kind of keep the mood a little light, but a little creepy and gothic at the same time, you know.
Yeah.
And your Oingo Boingo CDs have run out, that's, you got to hit the Addams Family scores. So, it doesn't look like... We can get Vic Mizzy's score digitally through iTunes, and you can get the Addams Family Values score digitally through iTunes, but not the original score, it looks like.
Too bad. I'll let everybody in on a secret. If you get some of that stuff and you're having a party, you can throw anything up on the TV with the sound off and the music playing, and it doesn't matter how gory or violent. It's perfect backdrop for a Halloween party.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Strangely enough, you can either listen to it or you can watch it. But if you do the both, that's when it gets horrific.
that's too much. Then just stick to your booze and you're fine. is there anything that we haven't hit, Chris, in our sort of, we're sort of spitballing. We're trying to figure out, you know, our perfect programming here. But
I know going in that I didn't think we were going to hit everything.
No, there's no,
I was kind of hoping that you and I would just kind of, and we did, just kind of meander our way through our personal faves, or if we randomly struck on something, we'd talk about it. But, I mean, hell, think about it. Did we never mentioned a single Evil Dead or Army of Darkness?
Yeah, none of the Sam Raimi films. Yeah, again, you got to hit some of the, like, Evil Dead 2 and Army of Darkness. And
the rise of the new Castle films and all that, so, like, House on a Haunted Hill.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And Wes Craven films. Just lost Wes Craven. And
Wes Craven.
I feel like,
so yeah,
a marathon is probably in order there. And man, there's just so. I mean, I think this is a good opportunity for us to open it up to our listeners and have you guys reach out to us. And
that's right.
What did we miss, guys? What do you always pop into that DVD or Blu-ray player, or, you know, queue up on your Netflix on Halloween? give us a buzz. Let us know, and you know, we'll start putting a little bit of compilation list together so that we can help people program their parties or their drive-ins or the New Beverly Theater. You know, because Edgar Wright calls me all the time, and he's like, "Hey, Troy, what should I play at the New Beverly?" And I'm like, "Hey, Ed," because we're on a first name basis. We're not at all. But yeah, call us up. Let us know what we missed. 470-242-4742. All right, so if anything has been proven in this episode, Chris, it's that we could program our own movie theater easily. You can convince anybody to like Ghostbusters 2 if we have enough time.
I don't know about anybody, but so far I'm 2 for 2.
You're 2 for 2. You've done it.
I've saved 2 souls, so to speak. Not to cool. be blasphemous.
Yeah, I mean, it was cool to hear Ernie's his thoughts on Ghostbusters. I never knew that he didn't have the affection for the second movie that he has for the first one. So it was interesting to hear that, and actually kind of caught me off guard. You can probably hear me audibly go on audio as we're talking, but yeah, I mean, this has been a fun episode. You know, getting to talk to Ernie was something, again, that we mentioned that first set of, like, what are we going to do for a podcast? Well, we could talk to Ernie Cline. That was one of those that we wanted to tick off the box for, and we got to do. So again, our thanks to Ernie for spending some time with us. And I mean, Chris, do you have any final thoughts? We've gotten to say a lot in this episode. Again, this is like our third episode that's pushing 2 hours.
My final thought is just a quick run back to the news there. Couple of things to consider. A, Michael C. Gross is still around with much to add to the franchise. So if they are talking about doing a new animated one, they should tap into him. And they should tap into these guys, or at least tap into the spirit of these guys that have done the computer-generated one, because if nothing else, they've proven that there is probably more than enough demand. Judging by the response people had to their animated intro remake, so a la, you know, the computer-generated Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, etc., you could do a, you know, a stylized RGB, bring it back, and the crowd would be there.
Yeah.
But to those guys, get off your asses. We want to see the parade at the end of the real Ghostbusters in CGI now.
Yeah, that's my final thought. Come on. Get to work.
That's right. Jeez. Look, you've spent a year or so working on it. You've had, what, 2 weeks? That's enough of a break. Back to work.
Get back to it. All right, well, thank you, Ernie. Thank you, everybody, for listening again. We really appreciate you. We couldn't do this without you guys. We love all of the feedback that we get from you, and we really appreciate you guys taking the time out of your day to listen to us. So please join us on our Facebook community page. You've got to search for Ghostbusters Interdimensional Crossrip on Facebook. We're building a community there. That's where you can find all of the videos and things that we talk about that we can't physically show you because, you know, it's audio. I'm sorry, we can't do it. We don't have the technology yet, but we will someday. But yeah, hit us up on Twitter, @ProtonCharging, @GhostbustersHQ. You can leave us a voicemail anytime you want. You just got to call into that line, 470-2-GBHQIC. That's 470-242-4742. And as always, if you have the time, we really appreciate anybody that can leave reviews on iTunes for us. That helps with the metrics and all the ones and zeros, however it puts our podcast into people's ears. So even if you just get there, click the 5-star link, that would help us out a ton. Our RSS feed is up on the GhostbustersHQ.net website. If you want to plug us into your favorite podcast app, you're more than welcome to. If you want to add us to a stream or a feed that you listen to religiously, please do. By all means, we really appreciate when you guys do that. Whatever it takes to have you listen to us ramble. I mean, it's whatever you want. We're just doing this, and we hope you listen, basically. But anyway, so if we're not linked, please add us. And yeah, that's pretty much it. So for Chris Stewart and myself, everybody, thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you all on the other side. Who you gonna call?
Thanks for joining the Ghostbusters Interdimensional Crossrip. Visit us at ProtonCharging.com, GhostbustersHQ.net, and StillPlayingWithToys.net.
That used to be one of my 2 favorite shows.
You're kidding me. Oh, great. What was the other one?
Bassmaster.
Everything you're doing is bad. Louder.
I want you to know this.
Next week, though, hairless pets.
Weird.